the APCDA podcast. This is your host, Ruchira Tripathi, and you're listening to the Voice of Industry. The year 2022 was full of tech drama, with the Twitter takeover, FTX crypto exchange crash, industry-wide layoffs, and the arrival of ChatGPT. As we look to the future, the tech industry promises to stir up and impact our careers, work environment, and our everyday life. In today's episode, we talk about the IT landscape and opportunities that this dynamic field presents to our clients. Please note that the views expressed on the podcast are that of my guest and not reflective of their organization. I'm here with Khalid Nizami, IT and digital transformation leader for Asia Pacific and China at Ecolab, which is a US MNC that specializes in water hygiene and infection prevention solutions and services. Khalid has more than 25 years experience at Fortune 500 companies such as Procter & Gamble, Hewlett Packard, Caterpillar, and Ecolab, where he has established and led high-performing teams on project management, service delivery, and vendor management to enable growth and transformation in businesses across the region. Khalid is especially passionate about circularity, sustainability, green IT, digital transformation, design thinking, and their interplay with technology. He's also a speaker, blogger, thought provoker, and an ICF certified coach. This is so impressive. Welcome to the show, Khalid.
Thank you, Ruchira. Pleasure being here.
There is so much to talk about IT these days. I mean, love it or not, it's a field that you cannot ignore. So has your journey always been this exciting? Could you tell us a little bit about your path? What's been the road that you traveled from the time that you were a fresh graduate to your present role?
As a fresh graduate, or even before that, you know, my dreams were to follow in my father's footsteps. I always wanted to be an army officer, and I worked towards that. Technology was something which was kind of like getting into a boom phase around the early 90s, late 80s. So I had my watch there. And as soon as I got to know that I'm not going to be like fit for the armed forces, I fell back on my plan B, which was getting into tech. So I went back, did my post-graduation. And at that point in time, India was opening up to multinationals as well. And P&G had just set their foot into India. And they were hiring lots of people, not just from a tech point of view, but all across the board. And they were setting up their plants, their manufacturing sites. And I fortunately was recruited from the campus into P&G. So my first job with P&G was in central India, a place called Bhopal, close to Bhopal in Mandideep. They were setting up a laundry business manufacturing site. So my responsibility was to set up that whole site. Completed that, then they were setting up a second site in the south of India. Went over, completed that, stabilized. Then the third site, or actually two sites in a place called Goa, my IT director at that point in time gave me the responsibility to lead the Y2K project. And that was not just for India, but it was for APAC. So P&G took over this huge initiative of implementing the global ERP, which was SAP, across all the countries where they had businesses in. So we were just starting up in India and around APAC. So I got into that team, spent a few years with HP, got an opportunity to work for Caterpillar, and then got an opportunity to work for Ecolab. So the way I went around was not just from a technology point of view. I was never thinking like, okay, I'm an IT guy. But I was also thinking of gaining experiences across different industries, right? So, you know, like the beauty of being in IT or in the tech industry is you're basically doing the same things, but if you're stuck with one industry, your learning, your continuous growth and improvement kind of like gets a little stagnated. Again, that's my point of view. So I tried to also look at working in different industries. It's been about 28, 29 years of being in technology, seen a lots of changes. And as you mentioned in the very beginning, that technology is again at that verge of, you know, like becoming the key industry, which is like really driving growth. And I can see that, you know, when I started, it was more of an enabler. It was more of like, okay, with technology, we can be more productive, more efficient. But now there are business models being like built and developed around technology, right? So a huge difference in the last 25, 26 years. Yeah. So that's kind of been my journey so far.
Thank you, Khalid. It was really interesting listening to you. Firstly, I didn't know you were an army kid. I think we never had that conversation. So there are so many things that actually you spoke about. If there are any, you know, job seekers that are listening to you, it is so useful. You talk about, for example, adaptability, how important that is, the willingness or the openness to, you know, try out new things and how that can kind of forge a career for you. You also talk about, you know, roles, because this, and when I say functional roles, like for example, you spoke about IT and the fact that you're not doing exactly something different if you were to move roles. You might be doing the same thing, but the environment and the context changes, and because of that you get new experiences. When I was doing the introduction, you had shared with me that circularity, sustainability, green IT, and then DX, which is digital transformation, design thinking, these are your areas of interest. And one may not typically associate some of these with IT, so they are quite unique. Could you share a little bit about how you would incorporate them maybe in your current role? How do you do that?
If we look at like what you mentioned, like circularity, sustainability, green IT, digital transformation and design thinking. So one of them which kind of like stands out is digital transformation, right? Which is very tech driven. I mean, like if you talk to anyone, even on the streets or layman, you tell them digital transformation, yeah, they probably can relate it to technology or IT. Right, but the other three areas are something, other four areas are something which people think like, okay, how is this even connected to technology, right? I believe they are all interlinked, and the simple reason is you basically look at like two aspects of technology in a very simple comparison, right? So there's the hardware aspect and then there's the software or the applications aspect. So when we talk about circularity or sustainability or green IT, you have to weigh on both of them, because in terms of building a simple smartphone or building a laptop, there's so much which happens under the surface, like all the way from like the main materials or the raw materials which are required to be used in the manufacturing of even a single laptop. There are people, there are kids actually mining these in countries like, you know, in continents like Africa, etc. Just like to put together a battery, cobalt is mined, right? So I don't want to get into the details of that whole thing, but just imagine, right? So there's so much coming out of the earth to just put together a laptop. And what happens when we get a laptop, we are already thinking of, okay, when is the new one getting launched and how can I get my hands on that? So typically in a household, we probably use our laptops for maybe 3, 4, 5, 6 years. But in many organizations, there are different life cycles for laptops, right? So you've been in the corporate environment, you know, like every 3 to 4 years or 5 years we change the laptops, right? So that's where the whole idea of circularity and sustainability comes in terms of like, okay, do we really have to change laptops every 3-4 years. Yes, the technology is improving, but if you kind of look at the whole end-to-end structure of an organization, not everyone needs a high-end new tech laptop, right? So there are people who can use a slightly lower version of or the lower technology or the previous technology for a longer period. So that's one of the reasons why I have been kind of like advocating and practicing this whole area of circularity, sustainability, and green IT, just to speak on at a very high level. But green IT is a much bigger area, right? So and that's the combination of digital transformation and green IT, because when you talk about digital transformation, lots of people think like, okay, if we just stop using our data centers and move everything into cloud, we are transforming. Yes, we are transforming, but there's the other side of the coin. Are we doing it in a sustainable manner? Are we doing it in a way that, you know, we are moving towards a more green information technology kind of environment, right? So not all your problems can be simply solved by putting everything into the cloud. It has to be efficient. So that brings me to the software side of things. So when we do the coding or the programming, it's so important that the codes, the programs are built in a very efficient way, that they are able to do what they are supposed to do in a simple manner, right? In a quick, simple manner. We don't have to unnecessarily build complexity into our codes and programs. That's seriously green IT. That's basically, you know, how the software side of things supports the whole sustainability and the impact of sustainability and the CO2 emissions, etc. So yeah, I mean, that's something which has been kind of like a passion of me for at least like 4-5 years now. I went on to do a postgraduate diploma in circularity and sustainability, just because of I wanted to understand more, like did it from MIT, like a long distance course. But that gave me a whole lot of insight into what are these concepts and how do they kind of relate to and work with the tech industry. And I've been like very privileged in a way that, you know, like I have done a whole lot of public speaking on these subjects, and I see like people are getting more and more interested in this area, not just the technology folks, but also the non-technical folks. Actually, on 16th March, I will be speaking at one of the events addressing the CIOs and the leaders, you know, mainly in the Southeast Asia region. So it is something which is really going to be a big game changer when it comes to technology, right? Now, the last thing which I don't want to forget is design thinking. Now, how is design thinking linked into all of this? So design thinking is nothing but, even before you start putting things together, you stand back and say like, what's the most efficient way to build something? So long way to go, but if we are able to like assemble our smartphones, which are like literally, you know, computers in the pockets, or even like laptops, etc., where we can change things when they are broken, or we can change things when they are older, right? We don't have to bring it to a servicing center. I can simply like just open it and take out whatever is not working, or I want a high-end like processor or whatever, I can just take it out and put in the new one, right? So I mean, as I said, it's a little bit of a distant thought process, but if we are able to get to that, that's basically where the design thinking aspects are interlinked with technology and digital transformation.
You were talking about green IT, and you were talking about, you know, what we call low-code technologies, low-code, no-code technology.
Yeah.
And I recently read an article about how that's going to explode, you know, in the next couple of years, and how that is also in a way kind of prioritizing IT, where it's giving, for the lack of a better word, power to the experts. Experts would be people who would be doing the job, not necessarily tech savvy, to design things that are useful for them and kind of, you know, increasing innovation. So that's actually such an interesting area. And I don't know if we'll have time to talk about it, but thank you for kind of bringing that up. Let me shift gears a little bit to the global IT industry. I think it's kind of a nice segue that you've given to us. According to Business Wire, which is a trusted source for news and media, the global IT market stood at $8 trillion in 2021 and is forecasted to grow to about $12 trillion by 2025, which is just a couple of years away. Asia Pacific is the second largest region in the pie and stands for, you know, I think it accounts for 32%, which is just a little bit behind North America. And I was really surprised when I read that. North America is about 34%. My question is, where is all the exciting tech-related action taking place in Asia Pacific and Middle East? And how does it interplay with the focus in various countries?
Sure. Look, I mean, there's always going to be things which are across the board, right? It doesn't matter whether it's North America or Asia Pacific or Middle East, Africa or any other place. So there's going to be certain technologies which are going to be exciting people. And when we talk about people, let's make sure that the Gen Zs are involved, right? So because like we are talking maybe a little on the professional level, but you look at any school today, there's a whole lot of technology being used in schools. Like as kids, I remember we used to, like, I'm sure you carried notebooks and you put in your notes in there, right? Many schools have moved away from that. Like everyone is using laptops and everyone is using like PowerPoint presentations instead of like printed books, etc. So there are technologies which are going to be across the board, but at the same time, there are technologies which are going to be more specific to the geographies, like maybe something which is predominantly being like used and developed in APAC may not be the same in Middle East, Africa, or within APAC, they could be geographies which are using certain technologies more than the others, right? So FinTech is one of the key areas where there's going to be a lots of work in APAC and probably certain parts of Middle East Africa, right? So when we talk about Middle East Africa, they have thrived on oil and gas. Now, that's something which is slowly going to be either exhausted or we will move to other technologies like, you know, electronic vehicles where automatically the consumption of these fossil fuels will start going down. So you can see a lots of progress, especially in UAE, again, from a fintech point of view, right? Like the other industry, which is, and I'm talking about businesses before I talk about technology itself, because finance, banking, investments, then we have tourism, right? Tourism is another industry which is going to be like highly dependent on technology. Then we have healthcare, you know, like tools have kind of like got onto the bandwagon of more technological development and exploration. Then there's going to be health, like lots of health and hygiene related aspects. Manufacturing, let's not forget manufacturing. Manufacturing has been a laggard for a long time, right? But now we are seeing a whole lot of development, technological developments in the manufacturing area. And I'm not just talking about putting robots to do the assembly and the production activities, but a lots of smart technology getting into the supply chain here, right? And like all the way from tracking things to just in time, lean concepts, which are moving towards technology. So if you break down Asia Pacific, China, for example, which is considered like the global manufacturing hub, we'll see a lots of technological development there. More like China has been advanced in terms of using technology, but there's going to be more and more advancements there, right? India is the other area where you'll have, like, again, manufacturing activities, supply chain activities. Singapore, Hong Kong will be more tech finance driven. I see Thailand, probably India to a certain extent, as countries which will be leading from a healthcare technology point of view, right? So there's a lots of healthcare tourism. I don't understand why they use that term, but lots of people are traveling to Thailand for healthcare related requirements. Similarly, Singapore has always been one of the areas for healthcare as well, right? So they will see a lots of development in that area as well. It will be interesting to see what happens in Japan, because Japan is an interesting geography because it's one country where I think I read recently that 70% of the population is above the age of 55-60. So just imagine, so less of the younger population, which will mean that they will really have to step up their game from a technological point of view, right? So one of the things, fun facts, is Japan is not a small geography, and there's a lots of dependency on moving things, you know, like they use lots of road transport to move things, and there's a shortage of truck drivers in Japan, which could mean, like, okay, can we use like self-driven trucks, right? So there's a lot at play. There's so many things when we talk about technology we have to think of, right? How is the geopolitical situations, what are the areas where any of the geographies are lagging behind or lacking in? How can we use technology? Australia has been big on mining within Asia Pacific. Now, again, with sustainability, mining will become a different ball game, right? I'm not saying it will go away, but it will become different. So and with the health risks and everything, I don't know if people are still going to be like keen on joining the mining industry, right? So again, how can we use technology there? Marine or the merchant navy aspects are quite big in this part of the world, right? Especially Malaysia, Singapore, to a large extent, China, Hong Kong. So those are areas again where we will see a lots of technological developments. I've spoken to several people over the last 2-3 years where I can see that, you know, some of these manufacturing, shipping, even healthcare, not from a what happens behind the scenes, but, you know, more from a regular technology point of view, these are areas which I really feel will be turning on in the heat on getting more technologically driven. So fintech, we see lots of progress, but the other areas will see quite a bit of activity happening in APAC. At the same time, there's a lots of change in Middle East. You see, like, all of a sudden Saudi Arabia is competing with UAE. There are areas where, you know, like, there's always the who's the bigger mall, who's the bigger, like, building, and so on and so forth, right? Who's the faster kind of country? So those competitions, healthy competitions, will again, like, make use of technology. So I think one thing which I would ask of the listeners of this podcast is keep your eyes and ears open. Like, read, talk to people, industry experts, right? There's so much going on, and it is very important to connect the dots and see where, as a technology person or someone who is aspiring to be a technology person, can become a game changer.
Yes, that's a very important point you make, Khalid. And I think what I've realized, you know, in the prepping of this podcast today is that all the roles are going to be impacted by tech. So it's not going to be that there is going to be like a tech person and then you go to the tech person and then get guidance. Mm-hmm. We all need to be tech savvy. Some are going to be more, and they would probably be part of, you know, the core tech type roles. But for the rest of us, we will not be able to do our jobs if there isn't a certain level of tech literacy. So moving to maybe some of the trends that you've kind of, you know, already mentioned, there is a loose consensus that AI, cybersecurity, AR, VR, blockchain, and some people say edge and quantum computing, these are kind of key trends of the future. Where do you see applications of these technologies? I mean, are they, for some of them, like for example, AI, cybersecurity, AR, VR, blockchain, we keep hearing about it, but not so much about edge and quantum computing. So could you share a little bit about the application as well as where are we in terms of the real application or usage of these technologies?
Yeah, so let's first talk about the ones which you mentioned, like are popular or people hear about them literally every day, right? Artificial intelligence or AI, machine learning, ML, RPA, robotic process automation, or mentioned blockchain. Blockchain is still kind of, I would say, in the infancy development phases, but yeah, it will probably become like as key as some of these others. AR, VR is a big deal now, right? Like, so there are applications, and one of the things which we should not forget is some of or most of these technologies, like which I just mentioned or you mentioned about, were not so popular 4 years ago. COVID has also helped in making some of these more popular, right? So why do I say that? Let's talk about AI and ML, right? So it's being used in retail, online shopping. It's being used in education, right? So you've seen basically lots of online courses, online e-learning, and even like, as I mentioned, long distance courses which are using e-learning concepts, etc. So not to say this was not happening, but it was fast forwarded during COVID. Now people suddenly realized that there has to be a whole lot of work done in these areas if you really need to kind of be competitive going forward, right? So one simple example, I'm sure everyone kind of does some kind of online purchases nowadays. So the moment you buy a pair of shoes or a pair of like trousers or shirt, even groceries for that matter, what do you see happening? Your phone starts popping up advertisements about these things, right? So and the end, like what you see and what your partner sees or husband sees or wife sees or kids see will be very different. And this is all driven by the behavior of what you're basically searching for or looking at or reading or even viewing on your smartphones or on your laptop, right? So that there's a whole lot of AI and machine learning at play there, to put it very, very simply, right? And I'm just kind of giving a very basic example here. And this is, again, a broad thing, right? So if you're looking for certain articles, Googling for, let's say, what's happening in healthcare, you will see a lots of healthcare related things start to pop up. Not just pop up, but you will see random emails in your inbox which are related to these subjects. So there's like a whole lot of AI ML which is at play there. If we talk about AR and VR, this is again becoming very, very popular, especially with educational industry, as people are not just kind of like, okay, just 2D, two-dimensional kind of learning, but they are getting into more three-dimensional kind of learning with augmented reality. It is also impacting a whole lot of online businesses, right? Because there are people who want to buy things online, but they are not very sure about the sizing. So there's a whole lot of augmented reality which is being used when it comes to these kind of requirements, right? How do I size it, right? So virtual reality has been there for a while. E-gaming is one of the big industries. I mean, yeah, it sounds like it's gaming, but it uses a whole lot of technology, especially AR and VR, right? And that's a multi-billion dollar industry now, like RPA. There's always going to be pressure on the businesses to do more with less, and if we are able to automate things which are like very regular, like, you know, everything has to be done the same way every day, if we can automate that using robotic automation or process automation, RPA is a big deal now, right? So there's, and again, COVID drove RPA in a very big way, because there were no people and there were still industries which had to kind of like buy and sell things, and yeah, lots of action happened in that area. Blockchain, although it's a little slow, but interestingly, blockchain is being used also from a sustainability point of view. You know, like there's a huge drive in terms of using blockchain when it comes to, like, let's say, for example, cocoa farms, right? Where is the cocoa coming from for making chocolates and other things which are dependent on cocoa? There's a lots of child labor which is used in the cocoa farming. And there are organizations, I don't want to name any, but there are big organizations which have fallen back on blockchain to make sure they are ensuring that whatever raw material they are buying is not through child labor or enslaving of children, etc. So those are predominantly the technologies which are, you know, like everyone hears about. Now let's talk about edge and quantum. So these are, I would say, like something which is going to be the foundation of the other technologies, right? So if you look at AI, ML, blockchain, etc., they are more software driven, right? Even AR, VR, software. But when it comes to edge and quantum, that is going to be a bit more of hardware, right? How can we make things faster? How can we ensure that whatever we want to process happens quicker, right? So that's the area where it's really going to be like more and more progress on the edge and quantum side of things. So yeah, there are organizations like, you know, mainly the technology industries which are on the hardware side of things. They are working quite actively on edge and quantum. I was involved in, like, I did a course and I got the opportunity to speak to a few people who are working on certain healthcare related solutions, like early startups in the healthcare industry. And some of these people are working on, you know, like how to make things easier from a, like, identifying cancers, right? And they're using edge and quantum technologies in that area. So yeah, like there's going to be again a wide use of edge and quantum as it becomes a bit more developed.
sure. Talking about talent, Khalid, when we talk about tech skills, we often only think about hard skills. Mm-hmm. And in the emerging, in the emerging tech landscape, do you think there are defining characteristics or softer skills that a tech talent needs to have in order to succeed?
For sure. Because again, you know, when we talk about tech talent, there's going to be the geeks and not so geeks, right? I'll put technology people in the bracket of everyone is a geek. So the geeks are the ones who are like always behind the computer, like putting the codes together, the programs together, right? And then there are the people who are actually interacting with where the need is. And that whole area is where there's going to be more soft skills required, right? So we spoke about design thinking. Design thinking is an area where you really go to the other end of technology, which is the users. Who are the users? How are they going to use whatever I'm going to put together, right? So empathy is one of the key aspects. You put yourself in the shoes of the user, right? You think as a user. So communication is going to be very, very important, right? So like you have to hold your thoughts back, listen, understand, and then clarify, right? It's not like what you want to do, but it's actually what is needed, right? So if you start thinking for everyone else, I don't think it's going to be very useful in terms of whatever you're putting together. Not to say that's going to be 100%, but most of it, let's say 80 to 90% of what happens going forward from a technological point of view will surely need better communication skills, better understanding skills, better listening skills. Empathy will be very, very critical. And one thing which I have also said in the past is, as technology people, we cannot be in love with the solution. We have to love the problem. Because if we are in love with the solution, we just like it becomes a bit of a ego thing, right? Like it's my thing and I did, like this is the best. And then it just kind of dies, because nobody wants to use it because you're not open to what's happening around there. So be in love with the problem. And that again, like, you know, when you talk about the soft skills, it's very important that you're listening to the consumer. You're listening to the people who are going to be using whatever is being built. So yes, for sure, soft skills are going to be very, very important. Now, I've spoken about the people who are facing the businesses or facing the customers. At the same time, soft skills are also going to be very important for the hardcore programmers and the coders, right? Because they will need to understand what is being communicated to them. So they have to be very open. They cannot be stuck in, I know what you are telling me, without having listened to the whole area or the thought which is being shared, right? So that openness has to be there on both sides, like in front of the table, in front of the computer, and behind the computer.
Right. We are almost out of time, so I'll just ask my final question. You know, as career counselors and advisors, we often work with job seekers who are making like a mid-career transition. And they're interested in making that transition into IT. And there are a number of organizations that offer certification courses with the reference. They may not necessarily promise, but that if you were to take the course, you might get a job in IT. What I want to understand from you is, which of the IT roles have the lowest barriers to entry specifically for, you know, this group of people?
It again depends on, when you say this group of people, you know, where are these people making the transition from? What has been their earlier roles, right? So if, let's say, for example, there's a finance person who has been doing financial analysis, that person can take on a course in data analytics or data science, and I'm sure like he or she will do very well in that particular area. If we just take that as an example, what will be very, very important is to be able to connect the dots, right? So if you're talking about mid-career switch from one industry to technology, it's very important to look at where have you spent your previous years and what is the complementary technology which can use your experience, and then make that switch. Like, again, having said that, it doesn't mean that you can go into a completely different area of technology, but mid-career, you know, like, industries still look at, organizations still look at previous experiences, right? So it's always better to not jump in a very radical, random manner, but make a shift where you can really use your previous experience and do the courses which are like in the technology area, right? So as I said, analysis, data science, data analytics, etc. If you were in process improvement, do something which is in the RPA area, right? That will be very useful. If you were, let's say, in the finance side of things, you can do courses on the useful in the fintech areas, right? If you were on the healthcare side of things, look for courses which are technology related on the healthcare side of things. So just connect the dots and the transition will become a lot more easier for you, right? It's not something which is going to be shocking, because one of the things which you also need to keep in mind when it's a mid-career switch is you're not alone. You have people around you, you have people to support, right? So you don't want to probably start from scratch. You know, if you're just making a big shift and what you did versus what you're going to do is like just not connected, then yeah, you might need to like restart or start from probably a little lower than what you are finishing. So yeah, there's a few things which you need to think of, but it's not impossible. Just make sure you connect the dots and make that switch accordingly.
Right. So what I understand that you're saying is that one basically needs to target roles that are a bit interdisciplinary in nature, where you can use your core skill and then add tech to it. Like, for example, yeah, digital marketing is something that you could do, or like finance plus tech is something, an example that you gave. So something along those lines.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you so much, Khalid. Unfortunately, we are out of time. I have so many questions that remain, but we don't have time anymore. It's been a really, really interesting conversation, and I really thank you for your insights and the comments that you've made about the industry. Thank you.
Thank you, Ruchira, and I hope this is going to be useful for the listeners. Thank you so much.